12 days before the election, most important election, some have been arguing, in the United States. And Brooke Spector, associate editor of the Daily Maverick, you were watching that debate much better than the last time around, wasn't it?
Well, good morning, Africa. It was more civil. It was more controlled. It was more guided. It was more directed. It still has the possibilities, which were amply demonstrated, that you can say something, and if you say it often enough, maybe people will think it's true. Or you can say things that are so misleading or so off the wall that you're left sort of head scratching. But Kirsten Welker, she deserves a gold medal. But so did Savannah Guthrie last week with the town hall with Donald Trump, because she held his feet to the fire, too. And what it says is, I think, that this younger generation of American broadcast journalists, they can be tough, and they can be tough in a way which isn't angry, just tough. It was worth watching because we got a chance to take the measure of the two men, I think. But the dynamics of the campaign process, I think at this point, with what, 12 days left, unless the whole dynamic was turned upside down, it leaves the two candidates pretty much where they were before. Donald Trump trailing, Joe Biden likely to be the winner. But in some of those crucial swing states where the vote will actually be determined, a little too close to tell just yet. So that's kind of the dynamic we got into and led from.
In the first, I only managed to obviously watch and listen to the first hour. I was watching but not listening to the last 30 minutes of the debate because the show had already started. I didn't get the impression that Donald Trump had done enough to necessarily sway voters in his direction, undecided or not.
No, that's my point. In fact, the pool of undecided voters at this point probably could fit inside your broadcast booth. Because unlike most elections, the number of people who haven't reached a conclusion is really quite small. But there's even further another wrinkle to this. Somewhere in the neighborhood of 46 million people have already voted by advance voting or mail-in ballots, and as a result, their judgment on the two candidates is done. They've already made their choice. They've cast their vote, and they've moved on to the next item of business in their lives. And no matter how this debate would have turned out, it wouldn't have affected 46 million votes. And that is something that is new to American politics. The dynamics of it also were interesting. Donald Trump was very clearly playing to his converted followers, people who have been with him from the beginning. In this long, extended discussion that Donald Trump carried off about Joe Biden's hidden millions of dollars being gained from China and Ukraine, and I forget the couple of other places he mentioned by the time it was over. This is all stuff that is sort of internal to the right-wing blogosphere, and most people in the country neither pay much attention to it because they don't believe it, nor do they really think it's central to the question at hand. And the fact that the Trump campaign continues to flail away at this, I think, speaks to a certain degree of desperation. It came, this latest iteration of this only came out a couple days ago, with the material that Rudy Giuliani, a president's personal lawyer, got from someone who is apparently a Russian agent or operative in an effort to help sway the election. I mean, you just have to shrug your shoulders at this. Biden, on the other hand, I think spent a fair amount of time explaining, for the most part, effectively the serious difference between he and Donald Trump on health care and on environmental issues, and for the most part managed to make it clear, or at least to clarify the positions. So on points, give it to Joe Biden. But it was closer than perhaps most people expected.
No, indeed. I mean, Joe Biden had his moments to shine and to sparkle, and he certainly took advantage of those. But the very many concerns going into this process that people had of Joe Biden also crept through. There were times when he appeared to be forgetful of things, where he needed a minute, and you could tell that he was using speech to buy himself a few seconds while he obviously finishes his thought before returning to it again.
Yeah, it's variations on the classic. I'm so glad you asked that question. It allows me to, now you had, you know, 3 or 4 seconds to, what in the world am I going to say to that? I mean, as a broadcaster, you probably have every once in a while been flummoxed by either somebody who's called in or somebody you're interviewing, and they say something so unexpected that it takes you a second or two to figure out what do you do next with this person. And, you know, let's be fair, Joe Biden is 77 years old, Donald Trump 74. Neither one of them are as quick and as sharp and as crisp as they might have been when they were 35. No, I'm not either. But it's not necessarily the rapidity of one's speech, but the clarity of one's thought that we're looking for here. And the Biden tactic of explaining the difference in health care proposals was highlighted to a considerable degree by the fact that he kept reminding people that Donald Trump doesn't really have a proposal. And the clarity on environment meant he had to clarify his views on fracking, that is, that process where water is injected at high pressure underground into reservoirs of hydrocarbons to extract them for petroleum products. He's not said that he wants to ban it outright. He wants to ban it on federal land, that is, government-owned land. It's a crucial difference. Could have been made clearer. It could have been made more succinct, and it probably was confusing to people listening to it. But on the whole, this is the kind of engagement that we just witnessed that voters should have been given from the beginning. Unfortunately, they didn't get it for the most part until tonight.
Even Donald Trump at some point complimenting the moderator, saying you're doing a wonderful job, which was quite funny to hear. Let me ask this then, Brooks. What happens between now and Election Day? Only 12 days left. We saw the former President Barack Obama being unleashed, literally, in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia. And he delivered what I thought was a wonderful, wonderful speech, where he was both attacking the current president personally, which is unheard of, right? It's custom that a previous president and sits out these kinds of things, and if he's going to be on the stompy ground for their candidate, really would spend more time praising his candidate as opposed to criticizing his successor. But Barack Obama spent a considerable amount of time literally tearing apart Donald Trump as a person as well as a president of the United States.
It's not quite unheard of, but you have to go back to about 1912 to find a previous example. So it doesn't happen very often. In 1912, Theodore Roosevelt was running as a third-party candidate against his own handpicked successor, William Howard Taft and Woodrow Wilson, and he had gotten sufficiently unhappy with Taft's policies and administration that he ripped into him on the campaign trail, but he was an active candidate at the time, so maybe even that one is unusual. But you got the feeling that Barack Obama had this stuff bottled up for 4 years, and he just, you know, it was like Popeye the Sailor. I've had enough. I can't take no more.
So, are we going to see more campaigning, I suppose? I imagine both the president and the former vice president are going to visit the stomping grounds more, where perhaps there are potential to swing those states in their favor?
Well, I think all the gloves are off now. I mean, now it's just bare-knuckle fighting. But the number, as I say, the number of people who have already voted throws this unusual twist into it, because the argument is now over an ever-decreasing number of people who haven't yet voted, or most especially haven't yet made up their minds, and particularly so in 5 or 6 or 7 of those battleground or swing states, places like Pennsylvania and Iowa and Michigan and Wisconsin and maybe Arizona and just conceivably North Carolina, Georgia, and Texas. But I think you're going to see, eventually Kamala Harris is going to come out and do the same kind of thing in a couple of more events. But you see the difference in the styles. I mean, the Trump style is going to continue to be those big rallies, with thousands of his acolytes standing shoulder to shoulder, largely unmasked and not paying particular attention to social distancing. And the Biden campaign is going to continue to be those smaller groups where the circle is drawn on the ground 2 meters apart, one to the next to the next. And they're going to rely that much more on social media and online presence. And they have lots of money to do that, is the thing. The Trump campaign has less and less money and has less money than they had expected. And so they're actually pulling reserved spots for television advertising in places that they might otherwise have put their money into in order to protect and preserve state voting places where they were presumed until recently to be in fairly safe territory. And then we get to November 3rd, and we get to stay up all night again to watch the results come in slowly and fitfully, only to discover that on November 4th, we still don't have an answer.
No doubt we'll be speaking to you then as well, Brooks. Thank you very much. Thank you for staying up to watch the debate and, as always, sharing your thoughts. Brooks Spector, the associate editor of the Daily Maverick.